Arna Michaelis and Pardeep Kalika. Welcome to Like Effect. It's a pleasure to have you both here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much, Audrey.
So take us back to what you both were thinking upon meeting each other for the first time.
Yeah. I was thinking, what the hell am I doing? We've corresponded before we met. As that correspondent sort of gained way into like, okay, you know what, we'll physically actually meet. That nervousness became real because like, okay, now I'm about to meet this person and not just be able to Google him or find out about what he's doing. Sort of stalking from a distance, I'm actually going to meet this person. There's always nerves with that. And those nerves were reinforced by, you know, just what had happened to us as a community and who did the shooting. You know, Wade Page was an affiliated white supremacist that belonged to the same organization that Arnold helped found back in the day. And just knowing that that was the way that it was, people were telling me, you know, are you sure you're okay? You sure you want to do this? Or are you just, some people would flat out just tell me, you're crazy for doing this. And so just getting through my own reservations and reservations of family, friends, and things like that was quite a challenge before meeting Arnold.
And how about you, Arnold? What was going through your head?
I was challenged as well, kind of from a different perspective. As Parr said, the shooter was from the gang that I had helped to start. And I felt a huge degree of responsibility for what happened. I felt like I had set the stage that produced this mass murderer. And it was a very serious responsibility for me to be accountable for it and to offer myself to Pardeep and his family and his community to heal in any way I can help. At the same time, like, I didn't know what to say. I, you know, like, hey, I'm Arno. Sorry about your dad. Like, it, you know, there's just nothing that would have seemed sufficient. And on top of that, just from my own vanity, the restaurant I invited Par to have dinner with me with, Isan, Tai Lao, and Farwell, is like my place. I've been known to eat there 5 days a week. I know the owners, I know the chefs, I know the servers. And I was very concerned about going to pieces when I met Par, as I have a tendency to do. I'm a big teddy bear, actually, and tears flow when they feel like flowing. And so I'm like, I'm just going to lose it at my place in front of all my people, and I meet this guy, and it's going to be really ugly. And I found that intimidating. It's an intimidating prospect for anyone to show their vulnerabilities and to express themselves like that. And so for those reasons, I had a lot of trepidation as well.
Yeah,
Pardeep, your family especially was very questioning of why you'd want to go meet Arno, especially after the shooting at the Sikh temple. But what do you keep in mind now after the fact, and you guys have formed a deep bond and kind of had, you know, your collision of two worlds and have since created a new one for yourselves? What do you tell people who may doubt Arno's genuine intent and of the relationship the two of you have formed now?
That's a great question. And, you know, first off, I tell them that they're fair to have reservations about Arno's change. And I think Arno makes it plain and clear that they're also okay to have those feelings. But then, you know, when we're doing this work, we want to be able to understand that transformation is the ultimate part of healing. It is that, you know, and especially like with the situation that with this incident itself, a white supremacist hell-bent on hate came into the Sikh temple and murdered six people who he felt like weren't allowed to be not only in America, but on the face of the planet. And that kind of hate, how do you respond to it? And you have to transform that. And that's active work. That's not, you know, yes, over time we heal, but we really can, like, that's not a guarantee. And we can heal really in ways that are very self-destructive and toxic. And so they kind of understood what I was doing. I think they understood the spirit of what I was doing. And for me, there wasn't anything like uniquely special about who I am and who I was. I think it's just, I felt that same weight of responsibility to respond, just as Arno responded.
Arno, your path to your work today and who you are was a long road of healing for yourself. And what do you keep in mind when people doubt your intentions, both from people on the outside and also people who are perhaps still involved in anti-Semitism movements.
As Parr pointed out, people have every reason to doubt me. I've done horrible things that will haunt me till my grave, and they should. And I don't begrudge anyone who carries that pain along with. A lot of the people who doubt me are people who have been traumatized by racism and by hate. And I understand that part of that healing process is saying, hey, this hurt me. Like, what you've done hurt me. And that has to be acknowledged before healing can commence. So if someone's healing process involves even hating me for what I've done and who I was, that's fine. It's the least I could do to be cool with that and understand it. At the same time, I would point out that even that hate or that doubt of me, while it's part of that process, it's not somewhere you want to sit and dwell. And I say that for the sake of the people in question, not for my own sake.
You mentioned dwelling on that hatred, and there's this whole theme of making sense of senselessness. Mm-hmm. When you first wanted to meet Arno, to try and understand the motivational factors in Wade Michael Page and other people like him, do you think it ever gets easier? I mean, every year there's an anniversary, but then it seems like every week, every month, there's a new shooting, there's a new hate crime, there's something else. So how do you guys continue the relentless optimism?
I think we take a lot of inspiration from those that we work with, and this has been like students, teachers, activists, clients of mine. During this journey, I really wanted to understand human behavior at a very deep level, and that got me into working with trauma clients. And a lot of the inspiration and strength that we muster up is through the people that we work with, which are survivors of violence all over the world and perpetrators of violence all over the world, and really exploring reconciliation and transformation through a trauma-informed lens. We're very much getting to the point where we're not looking at people and saying, what is wrong with you? We're trauma-informed, so we're asking a different question, like, what happened to you? And when you ask a question like that and frame it in that way, you almost automatically have to do something about it, whether it just be bearing witness and listening to actively saying, okay, we can do something with policy, procedure, and systemic violence that has been existing for a very long time and where we're at right now.
This book is titled The Gift of Our Wounds. And one of the things that came after the Sikh temple shooting was a mass education to people of what Sikhism is and who the people are, what their religion stands for. What other gifts came from the tragedy and now through your friendship as well?
One of the gifts that I am always just absolutely overjoyed and humbled to see is other people's healing process facilitated by our story. And in my work, since I've been doing this in 2010, just coming up on stage, spilling my guts with openness and honesty and revealing my vulnerabilities, it's a really important part of my healing process. But just about every talk I've done, and I've done hundreds of them, I've had at least one person, if not more, come up and say, hey, you've helped me get to that place of openness and honesty as well, or you've inspired me to begin that journey. And that's a gift that is just absolutely priceless. And it couldn't have come from anywhere but the wound of our respective stories personally, and honestly, the wounds that exist in our society after 500 years of white supremacy.
Yeah, and Audrey, you said it right, like, before this, little was known about the Sikh community. And this is, we've been here for a very long time, and I feel like, in a weird way, it was like the fifth largest religion in the world. Barely anybody knows who Sikhs are, and oftentimes are confused with Muslims, especially post 9/11 and just how much that was on people's minds. But this, like, the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin in Oak Creek now is probably the second or third most well-known gurdwara in the world. And that's saying quite a bit. That's like next to the Golden Temple, which is the holiest place for Sikhs. And I mean, this can always be argued with people, but this is, I mean, it's well known what happened. For Sikhs, we call it Qurbani, we call it sacrifice, martyrdom, whatever you want to call it. But really to be able to die in a place that you helped build is really called Shahidi. Like that's the way that a Sikh would want to die. And so Dad died that death. And so continuing on in that legacy, those gifts from that has been very much a spiritual journey for, I think, for both of us as brothers, friends, Arnold being my therapist, and hopefully I can help him with his stuff. But it's been a very spiritual journey, and we don't know why things happened why they happened to us. And I thought about the story of the Waffle House shooting and the hero that came from that and basically stopped the gunman. And after that, after he stopped the gunman, you know, there was a story that came out that basically said he, you know, wanted to count the eyelashes on his daughter. And that gift of just presence and mindfulness and like that would not happen without suffering. And that's it's horrible that that has to be that way, because I don't think it has to be that way for everybody. I think you can really truly treasure life without having that amount of suffering. But that's the biggest gift that came out of this, is that I genuinely, and I think we both genuinely treasure life like that, that's like everything is just completely mindful of like how much joy it brings us and reminding us to be very authentic. I don't think me and Arnold rehearse a thing before we ever take a stage. and to be able to do that and say, okay, you know what, I'm just going to speak my truth and just believe spiritually what is meant to come out will come out is a huge gift.
You guys going around talking about not only your book, but this, of course, relates to present day events as it has done in history, as you mentioned before, Arnold. One thing that is constantly on our radar right now is mass shooting preventions or the occurrence of mass shootings, gun violence. And Pardeep, you have a unique encompassing view of gun violence. You know, first you were a police officer, so you dealt with that, both in being trained in using a gun and also dealing with gun violence in Milwaukee. You know, former high school teacher, your trauma therapy that you do now and having lost your father to gun violence. So between your experiences and what you talk about, what do you think needs to change, or what needs to change in the narrative or in people's outlooks? What do you guys talk about when it comes to mass shooting prevention?
The biggest thing that needs to change is obviously there's all kinds of factors. And when we look at some of these issues politically, we have siloed conversations around, like, is it guns? Is it mental health? Is it, you know, school safety? What is it? And once it's like, let's get used to saying it's all of those things. And these multi-symptom problems need multi-symptom solutions. And that takes everybody, whatever you're doing in your respective fields, to come together and say, okay, I can do this. And really raising your hand when it's time to say, okay, who's going to be accountable? And I think there's a lack of that in our culture right now, is that we're passing the buck onto the next person and saying, well, that person didn't do their job and this person didn't do their job. And that happens quite a bit in mass shooting scenarios. You know, I think about Florida and I think about the shooter in that case and how many signs there were to get him some kind of help. And I would say, like, you need to be able to say, okay, this is really troublesome, this behavior. What kind of intervention do we have? And can we bring people in, such as an Arnold, to talk to this person and really get holistic help, like care, surrounding what the voids in this person's life are? There's a brilliant method that is used overseas called the Aarhus method. That would be a perfect example of what we can utilize here, but it would require that community is working with law enforcement and law enforcement is working with community, and we have this synergistic relationship.
Yeah, the Aarhus method that Pars mentioned was originated in Aarhus, Denmark. It's the second largest city in Denmark. And it's a means basically of community violence prevention, where the municipality, the government, reaches out to the community at large, but also in particular immigrant communities, refugee communities, and does so from a position of offering help to say, hey, we're worried about this kid. He's been having violent rhetoric. He's feeling alienated. And rather than, like, again, say what's wrong with them, say what happened to them and how can we help? So if it's employment, if it's education, if it's counseling, offer these wraparound services to say, hey, we want you to be part of society. We care about you. We want to help you through all whatever problem you're facing right now. And when that's done with authenticity and it's done with genuine compassion, communities are much more motivated to be part of this rather than seeing themselves as separate from the government. In the States here, it's almost a point of pride for some people to be like, I have nothing to do with this government, the government, the government. And especially with the last election, that's coming from both sides of the political spectrum now. So we got to get over this disconnect and understand that we are all in this together. And we absolutely need a holistic approach to gun violence. We need to say those words, gun violence. At the same time, we do need to say mental health. We do need to say parenting, bullying. All these issues all fall into place. And I think that's what we need to do before we can really take firearms seriously in this country, which I don't think we do right now. I've been shooting guns since I could hold one. My dad is a certified gun nut. I love to shoot. I own firearms. I understand the attraction to them. I own a firearm for my self-defense because people want to kill me because of who I am and what I say. At the same time, I would be more than happy to go through steps to get a license to have and keep my gun. I have no problem with being in a federal database owning that gun. To me, those are common sense things. And I was raised to take firearms very, very seriously. It's not something you play with, and it's not something that you want to make as easy to acquire as a gallon of milk. Right now, it's far more difficult to adopt a cat from the Humane Society than it is to go pick up a firearm. And while I love cats and we need to make sure they're going to a good home, like getting a firearm should be way more difficult.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And it's not.
And then I think that's there's that sense of responsibility. And, you know, one of the other things that we have been talking about lately is, you know, since the 80s, I think, I don't know about the stats, but I think there's only been two mass shootings that have been like almost all these mass shootings are committed by boys or men. And there's something extremely disturbing that is happening to our boys and men in this society. Mm-hmm. And this lack of being able to express yourself emotionally. Like Arnold said, like, you know, he cries now at that. and that's a beautiful thing for somebody to be able to not just cry, but just saying, you know what, I'm not afraid to express myself. And the other part is like not being just afraid, but like being able to express yourself emotionally outside of avoidance and anger. That combined with all those other factors is making it a very toxic relationship between boys, men, and society here.
Pardeep, you mentioned in the book that Arno represents what is great about America. So in a time when people may not think America is so great right now, and there's so many examples of what's wrong with things, can you remind us of what is great and how Arno brought that thought to your brain, and then to turn around on Arno of what Pardeep represents?
Yeah, I you know, for Arno's journey, where he was born in Wisconsin, Mequon, and growing up here and getting into the ideology and the, you know, the extremist organization that he was involved in, and really taking a look at himself and reflecting, I think that's the greatest thing about America, is that it has the ability to change and to transform. You know, we often jokingly say that we absolutely believe that there's no absolutes. One of the absolutes is change. You know, I would love to say that I'm going to look this pretty and this handsome for the rest of my life, but the likelihood is probably not. You know, I'm going to change. The society's going to change. I think America represents that better than in any other country, is that we understand and we have to acknowledge our history. We have to be truthful with it. We have to be honest with it. And that's that healing journey. Now, Trump being in office is just a reminder of like days of past and this whole preservationist sort of suffering that people exist in. And it's like, you know, you have the people who want change to happen and are willing to embrace change because they know that it's going to happen anyways. And then there's those people who are like, you know what, I want to preserve what was in the past and look at it through rose-colored, you know, sunglasses. And basically, it was so great back then, and this was happening. But the truth is that there was a lot of people going through struggle in the past. And you know, even like just once, you know, I can tell you this, like once a person passes, you only remember the good things about that person, right? Because there's no use to remembering like the bad things. And that's kind of the way that we're built, is that once that suffering is passed, you kind of remember the good things about that. And, you know, for all in all, I think that we're at a really good place.
After August 5th, like the week after for me was a blur, as it was for Party. But I was doing a ton of media. It was just like I could barely keep up with everything that was happening. And on the Sunday after, so 1 week to the day, I did a quick like 3-minute talk at a vigil. And a guy named Jasjit Singh from an organization that represents Sikhism legally, and he came up to me and said, "Hey, I really appreciate what you said, and I appreciate the media you've been doing." And I just lost it. Like, speaking of me breaking down, I just started bawling. And he gives me a hug. He's got this beautiful, like, really expensive looking suit. I'm getting snot all over it. And like, all I could think to say was, I'm just like, I wish there was more of you guys here. Like, I wish there was more Sikhs in our country. And I said that like from the absolute most genuine place. And the reason I felt that way was not just because this one particular man was so understanding, but because for that entire week, as I was talking about my past, I was in awe of what the Sikh community demonstrated. Like the relentless optimism of Charikala, the forgiveness, this radical responsibility of, rather than saying, "No, this is so-and-so's fault and it's racism's fault and guns' fault," almost every person from the Sikh community after the shooting was like, "Hey, what can we do better? How can we let the community know what Sikhism's all about better?" And it just absolutely blew my mind. That combined with getting to know Party, and knowing other, being just blessed to know so many other like fresh immigrants to this country, I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt, I've never met anybody who loves this country more than Pardeep's family. So for people who want to make America great and they feel patriotic, like, there ain't nobody more patriotic than people who have come here and were given opportunities that they couldn't have had elsewhere. So if somebody loves the United States, they should absolutely love immigrants, because that's what makes this country great.
Well, Arno and Pardeep, I want to thank you both for coming in today, sharing your stories and sharing the gift of our wounds.
Thank you, Audrey.
Thank you, Audrey.